everybody can hear. Any questions left over from before, before we go on? Okay, I wanted to, since today our topic is about timing, I want to say a little bit about what happens when the timing is all wrong. We've all had this experience. I'm on 85. And this is called asynchrony. Negate something. So sometimes the timing of our choices is not matched up with what actually needs to happen. We notice that nothing works, the doors keep closing, the obstacles arise, and they're not really challenges, they're blockades. I'm on 85. And we notice that if we fight on, it's just a war of attrition where you lose more and more instead of gaining. Then there's a law of diminishing returns. So when this occurs, we need to pay attention to it and not try to get in control of it. Just say, oh, okay, the timing isn't right for now, so I need to let it go. Because the timing isn't always right for everything that we want to do. The timing is always right to receive a moment of grace. The timing is always right to be enlightened, but it's not always right to move on choices that we want to make. Sometimes it takes a lot of simmering. So how would you know when the time isn't right? And now I'm going back to the other topic, which is how would you also know when it's time to let go? I'm on page 88. When you notice that all the effort you're putting in only further depletes you, and it's really wrecking your self-esteem, you feel bad about yourself for putting in all this effort and nothing comes of it. I had an interesting, just a memory, a very interesting question for a client. And I have to admit, I have to agree with her. She said she has 4 children, one of whom, like he's in his, you know, he's like 19 or 20, and he's a drug addict. And she has put in so much effort to try to help him find the program, go to the program. He goes in, she's willing to pay for it, then he drops out and goes back to the drugs, goes back and forth. And she noticed that she was putting all this energy into this one kid, really. She loves him, of course, in the same way she loves the other kid. But she was, like, disregarding the other kids. She wasn't paying much attention to them because he was absorbing all the attention. And no matter what he did, and no matter what programs he went to, he just kept going back. And she said to me, and she also has a Catholic background, so you can, you know, the guilt issue was in there. She said to me, do you think I'm wrong if I say, okay, I've done what I can do, I'm available in whatever way I can be, but I cannot keep putting this much time and energy into you. You've, you know, gone this way, and I'm praying for you to come back to your senses, but I just can't keep doing this because it's not fair to the whole family. And I think the youngest kid is like 8th grade or something. And I have to say yes. I think you're okay with making that kind of a decision. You know, you don't have to feel guilty because you're still available, but you're just not going to keep beating your head against the wall when he keeps making the same choice. So we don't give up on anyone ever because we're always available. But at a certain point, you stop putting all the energy into something. Does this make sense to everybody? So I had to agree with her. I mean, never have quite thought of it that way, but I thought she made a lot of sense. So anyway, this would be an example. You keep doing something and it's not yielding any result. Things are only worsening. That would be another way to see that time to let go. You feel as if you're kicking against the goad. You feel as if you are putting energy in and something is telling you that it isn't supposed to go in that direction. It's become dangerous to you or others. It has become intrusive on other people's lives. It keeps exploding in your face over and over again. It's not yielding results. What you're doing is based on wishful thinking rather than evidence of change. Like the example I gave, I'm wishing that he will see the light, but there's no evidence of change. Everybody see the distinction? Yes.
Part of the definition of insanity is continuing to do the same thing over and over that doesn't work.
Yeah.
Expecting a different outcome.
Yes. Yeah, that would be an example. You keep doing the same thing and it still doesn't work. Everybody follows? This is the idea of when the timing isn't right and how do you know when it's time to let go? And I would put it as you let go, but you always remain open to when something changes, then you'll go right back in with your effort. Yes?
That's what Al-Anon is all about.
Yes, very much the Al-Anon approach. So if you look on page 89, I have my list of some hints that help us know when it's time to let go or to go if you're in something that isn't really working for you. So I give much more than I receive. Keep giving more and just receive less or nothing. There's a limit to that when you're a healthy person. I do more and more and I see the success of less and less. Less and less successful, more and more of it. I feel I'm giving up something rather than giving and receiving. We've all had that feeling. My health is suffering because of the stress that's coming from my energy and put into this. I'm no longer effective. That's a big one. Even what I once liked doing and can do well is now flat, stale, uncomfortable, not yielding any results. My bliss and enthusiasm are gone. I'm not coming up with any new creative ideas. I've been doing too much for too long for too little thanks. And so forth. I won't read them all, you have them in the book. But I do want to say that most of us were brought up in religious traditions or in families in which we were told not to pay attention to these. Just hang in there, just keep giving, that's what it's all about, sacrifice. So what we're trying to do here is we're trying to understand how we could still be loving, but love ourselves too. And that's the part that was often missing, even though the commandment is love others as you love yourself. We didn't get the as you love yourself part. Question?
Well, I just always had thought that we grew up with the phrase better to give than to receive.
Yes.
And I never believed that. It's just, it's mathematically impossible. if you don't leave yourself open to receive, then everything gets out of balance.
Mm-hmm.
It's a selfie.
Yes. Okay, Jim.
Your ability to receive, your ability to receive can actually be a gift for the giver.
Mm-hmm.
It's a two-way street.
Mm-hmm.
And you may not get a whole lot back, but if the person that is receiving your gift appreciates it and shows that, that's a gift to you.
Good point. Pete.
My name is Peter. Actually, I thought you were talking about my grandson. My daughter went to the wall trying to be of help, and she finally had to stop because it was getting worse and worse, and she had to back off. It took 4 more years before he on his own went to the edge, and then he was in total desperation, and that was the right time. Now he's been 3 years clean. He's leading a group. He's doing marvelous. It took 2 years to recover from how far he drove it. But it was the timing. That
yes.
was perfect.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and thank you. Timing is so mysterious.
Mm-hmm.
Because, first of all, we don't like the idea of timing because we want to be in control.
Mm-hmm.
We decide when it's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And it just isn't set up that way. Things actually have a timing chain. And they have to honor it right down to the last minute. And we can't hurry or delay it. So part of appreciating synchronicity, meaningful coincidences, is to honor the coincidence of the readiness for change and the timing of when change is possible. Bob.
I just had a story that I heard recently by reading the book called Outliers, and that is kind of a lesson in synchronicity. And one of the examples of the book Outliers was, how did Bill Gates get to be where he was? And it turns out it's just a series of synchronous events. He was the only 13-year-old back in the 60s or whatever the time was, that had access to a small computer in 24 hours a day, and he spent all of his time doing that. He was just there by coincidence. He was the one guy that was in the proper place to be able to do what he ultimately did. So that's a terribly synchronistic
yes.
example.
Yes, very much so.
Just an example that I'm living through, that synchronicity, I was adopted when I was at birth, and there's a whole series of synchronicities of how I came to be and how I ended up where I was. And anyway, I found my birth parents when I was 34 or something like that, and my birth mother had never told anybody. She never even told the man, so he never even knew that she ever was pregnant. Well, now, and I contacted him, but I didn't disclose who she was, but long story short, I contacted him again because I said, you're getting older, I'm getting older, I can't believe you're not curious about this. So he and I are in contact now. He contacted her, and now they're dating. Now and they are both over the moon, and they're saying they're going to rent a hall so I can go to Virginia and meet all of them because there's so many relatives. And she kept this secret, her sin, for 50-some-odd years. Never told anybody. And has just now told her children, who I'm also in contact with. And so, talk about perfect timing.
Yes.
I mean, that was simmering a long time.
I bet we're full of synchronicity stories in this audience.
And I was thinking of a short poem by Rumi, just to make this connection between timing and the spiritual. His poem is, "Dissolver of sugar, dissolve me, if this be the time." So I want the power, the higher power, to dissolve my ego this is the time. And putting in that if this is the time is the equivalent of saying, I'm honoring the timing that comes from the spiritual world because I can't make it happen on my own. So just another example of the timing. Remember the phrase from Isaiah, be still and know that I am God? So the be still. So that would be reasonable advice. I'm going to be still and know. How will I know when I'm still, when I sit in the silence? What is silence? The attitude of listening without having to say something. But we also have this. From the Battle Hymn of the Republic. He hath sounded forth his trumpet, which shall never call retreat. He is sifting out the hearts of men before his judgment seat. Oh, be swift, my soul, to answer him. Be jubilant, my feet. Our God is marching. So that, as the concept of, well, there is no retreat, you're going, you have to keep moving. She was encouraging people to join the Union Army during Civil War time. 15, because it was the year of gold, you know, looking for gold. So the judge is going to sift you. So you better take action.
Dr. Rico, can you repeat that?
Okay. So you can't hear back there as well?
No, I can't hear that.
Oh, okay. This Battle Hymn of the Republic is written for... She actually wrote the entire poem in the middle of the night. She just woke up and she had the whole poem in her mind. She wrote the whole thing out. Imagine that. And one of the verses says, be swift, my soul, to answer him. Be jubilant, my feet. So it has the idea of don't be still, don't retreat, move, take action, and do it swiftly, because if you don't, you will be judged, and you will be sifted out of salvation. You will not be given the reward of heaven. Obviously, it's very overly patriotic, but that's not the point I'm making. Is that we get two different types of advice. We're told be still, but we're also told be swift. And the way to tell which one to go with is to check into, well, what's the timing? What fits? What fits for me right now? Is this the time for me to take action? Or is this the time for me to be still? And this process of letting ourselves find out is called discernment. You sit and try to discern which way to go. And when I did this list, the list helps us, but it would also be a kind of openness to the voice of the Holy Spirit. Mm-hmm. Holy Spirit, the wisdom that keeps wanting to come through us. So we would want to open ourselves to that. I've been using the little prayer, Holy Spirit, show me what you want of me. Very simple. Holy Spirit, show me what you want of me. Because sometimes we need to be shown, like, you know, pointed to... What is the choice that I can make that will be pleasing to the Holy Spirit? Pleasing to the Holy Spirit, how would we translate that into terms that we can understand? that I will act in accord with the wisdom that's deeply within me. And that wants to come through me. And sometimes it comes through other people. And sometimes it comes through dreams, which we will be talking about next time. And sometimes it just comes from kind of an intuition, sudden realization. So we would want to be paying attention to the various sources of where the voice comes from. And then we will easily know, is this the time to be still, or is this the time to be switched? Question? Hi.
I was just thinking, there are some of us who are kind of like Geminis. You can't make up your mind right away, you know. You go this way and you think that way. And so personality types might impede or help, I don't know, making choices.
Very good point. I mean, if you're more introverted, you're more likely to be in the be still area. And more extroverted, you'd be swift. But we're trying to cut through that. And even while I'm introverted, there are times when I do have to take action. And no matter how extroverted, there are times when I have to be still.
There's a part of a poem, you probably know the whole thing, but I just remember part of it, where you can be both. To be still and yet still moving.
Right. He's referring to a prayer to the Virgin Mary in a poem by T.S. Eliot. Teach us to be still and still moving. Teach us to be still and still moving. Do we have any other people that want to ask? We keep hearing from the same people. Okay, way in the back, Deanna.
Well, I have just a quick comment on the children with drug addictions. I belong to NAMI, where a lot of us have dual diagnosed children. And one thing we talk about is loving, tender neglect, which is a strange way to put it, but to allow them, you know, their own dignity of their tiny. And you're there, the loving, tender, but you're also, you know, in deep respect that they have to do it in their own time, in their own way, and to find their own self-worth. So that was just a comment on that. But I also have the sense that as we get older, at least me, and I'm imagining a lot of us, we're more on that right-hand side. It's much more natural at some point to hang out more over there. But what comes up for me is when I have to go to the left side and do the action part, I find resistance sometimes to that now. So that's just a comment.
Yes. We notice resistance in both directions, probably. Right?
Mm-hmm. I just think that the culture has diminished expectations as we age.
Yes.
And so, you know, they as we get older, they want us to continue to fit into the quiet and the pull back. And so then when we do speak up, then that's what constitutes the resistance.
Yes, good point. I just wanted to read one other paragraph. I'm on page 87. This is the first full paragraph. And I want to make one last point. Paying attention is the first requisite for finding asynchrony, finding out when the time is not right. The second is letting go of the inflated ego belief that it has to be my way or it has to be one way. I cannot force a butterfly to emerge before its time. I cannot successfully pull the budded petals of the rose away to make it look as if it were in bloom. It would be just as impossible as that to try to contradict the natural timing. And that word attention comes from two Latin words. The T T-E-N-T part means to stretch, and the other part means toward. So to pay attention is to stretch from yourself toward something. Really, to pay attention is not just to notice. You have to reach out from yourself toward it. It's a movement in the direction of what you're focusing on. So if you let your eye focus on a flower, your eye has moved in the direction of the flower. That's what's meant by attention. And many of us don't have that habit in us very much. Like if you sit and watch television, it's just sort of coming at you. You're not moving in the direction of something. Real attention is moving in the direction. So that's why in true love, to be attentive to the partner means going out of yourself toward the other who understands her or him, not just noticing what's going on. Okay, any final questions before we end? Okay, yes. Hold it 1 second.
But that also, doesn't that also produce a lot of anxiety, you know, because I'm doing something right now that I have always been attentive to it, but the going toward and stretching out is what I'm doing now, and it's like, oh, you know, it's really hard to do that. I'm extremely nervous about it.
Yeah.
That's not unusual.
Not at all. I think we can all relate. And that's where resistance comes in. So that's where the calling is to work through the resistance, to stretch toward that which is real. Well, I'd like to end with a beautiful poem by St. John of the Cross. This poem combines the be still and the move themes, as you will hear. And a little background on the poem. He was a Carmelite monk. He's one of the great Spanish mystics, of course. He himself is of Jewish origin. His great-grandparents were forced to make the choice either become a Catholic or leave Spain. They converted. And then by the time he came along, he was a full-on Catholic. So we have the Jewish and the Catholic parts. And he was in prison, and he heard, he was in a dungeon, and he heard a Muslim, he was in the part of Spain that had a lot of Muslims, he heard a Muslim person walking by singing a love song, which he himself knew. And some of the words of the love song started him writing this poem, which is called The Dark Night of the Soul, because he was in this dark night and he was going through a very hard time. But he put together the passionate words of the love song into this poem. So the poem kind of combines the Islamic, Jewish, and Christian all together. All three traditions come together in this, and as you will hear, it's very powerful. And you can have your eyes opened or closed as you listen to this, because it's a highly spiritual poem. It has beautiful imagery, very easy to understand. And just let it kind of carry you. And notice as I'm going through the poem that notice how it keeps moving from the stillness to the movement, which is the arc of our life. Upon a deep dark night, lit only by the anxiousness of love, oh, venture of delight, with nobody in sight, I went abroad when all my house was hushed. In darkness, in disguise, in silence, up the secret stair I crept. Oh, happy enterprise, concealed from other eyes, while all my house at length in silence slept. Upon that lucky night, inscrutable to sight, I went without discerning, and with no other light, except for that which in my heart was burning. It lit and led me through, more certain than the light of noonday clear, to where one waited near, whose presence well I knew, there where no other presence might appear. O night that was my guide, O darkness dearer than the morning's cries, O night that joined the lover to the beloved bride, transfiguring them each into the other. Within my flowering breast, which only for himself entire I saved, he sank into his rest, and all my gifts I gave, lulled by the airs with which the cedars wave. Over the ramparts fanned, while the fresh wind was fluttering his tresses, with his serenest hand my neck he wounded, and suspended every sense with his caresses. Lost to myself, I stayed, my face upon my lover having laid, from all endeavor ceasing, and all my cares releasing, I tossed them among the lilies, there to fade. Thank you all.